Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Brunberg.
Well, howdy, 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 everybody. Welcome to another episode of Electrician Live. My name is Paul Abernathy, one of your hosts as always, and with me, as usual, my co-host, Mr. Jay Grunberg. Mr. Grunberg, welcome as always to the show.
Hey, hey, everybody.
Yeah. We are here live. It is live, as you all know. Thursday nights, the new night for Electrician Live. I guess it's been that way since, what was it, end of March. Probably like the 25th. I think it was like the 25th of March we changed over. Do it that way.
So, I wonder what all the people are thinking that never changed over. You know, they're still on Saturdays.
When is Electrician
Live coming?
I did get some tickets and emails going, where was it? Where were you at? Didn't see the show. So we're here. Of course, you can always go watch the episodes over on electricianlive.com. Over there, I post all the episodes after they play. So you just go down, click on it, and you can watch the episode if you want to watch one, something to your liking. Again, as always, you can also send in, even from the website there, you can actually send in requests for future shows. So feel free to do that. As they stack up, we'll get to them as we get to the show. So I guess before we start, Jay, how was your week? How was the weekend? How was Colorado? Is it still cold or are you you warmed up now?
No, we're starting to get some pretty good, consistent, nice weather.
That's good.
But the thing is now that springtime's coming, we're getting congested here at the household. So it seems like, you know, like I was explaining last week, we were kind of under the weather. It just keeps changing on us. You know, one week it was like a little stomach virus thing, and this week it's just kind of congestion in the face. But other than that,
Congestion in the face.
It just sits there and like...
It's right in your face. All right, but the work must go on.
The work must go on.
We give shout-outs, Finley. Thank you for joining us. Looking forward to taking the Fast Tracks. Well, we're looking forward to having you. Welcome you to the Fast Tracks family. Ronbo. Ronbo's in the house.
What's up, Ronbo?
In the house. He must have had an evening off that he could join us. Thank you, Ronbo. Sure. Still waiting for Ronbo to get started in the Fast Tracks program. But he's in it. Just hasn't really done anything yet. He's been busy. Ronbo's been busy. I'll give Ronbo a hard pass on that right now. So I guess it's hold on.
How was your week this week?
It was a good week. It's been pretty busy of a week. I think most of you out there probably or don't know, but will know. We have a webinar coming up, a 2-hour webinar. Coming up, and I've been working on that. Again, it was Brittany had posted it on, I guess, the social media, and I wasn't aware of it, and I needed to be made aware of it, and now I am aware of it. And so, but I didn't have a full presentation all done for it, but now it is. So I've been working on that, creating some new graphics and working with some of the stuff out of our Fast Tracks program, because our program covers it. You know, covers tap rules,
right.
240.21B, you know, B1, B2, B3, B4, you know, all covers all the tap rules and secondary conductor rules and 240.21C, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, cover all of that, but people like condensed, right? So I'm going to do a presentation on that. So it's going to be a 2-hour webinar. So look forward to signing up for that. It's going to be very affordable. I think it's still the mini webinar series are, I think they're $25. So I don't know where you're going to go to get that and learn everything you want to know about tap conductors and tap rules and secondary conductor rules and sizing and that type of thing. But it's very much going to be focused on that. So that's what I've been up to. And then doing a bunch of stuff for obviously my, what we call our day job. So it's been pretty busy. Oh, I guess I should tell you, most people know, and you know, as a business owner, how important soft skills are. And people take those totally for granted, right? How to deal with customers, how to retain customers, how to put the best image, best foot forward, how to retain your reputation, all those different things are all part of what we call soft skills. And so we have a new course that's out there for soft skills, and it really walks you through everything from the halo effect on how you can set the greatest impression, and it's hard for them to ever find anything wrong with you, versus setting the wrong impression. That's the horn effect. And then next thing you know, everything you do, getting out of your car, not keeping your work truck clean, the customer sees garbage fall out of the truck. You don't have time to throw it back up in there. They already have an impression of you. You're a slob. So once you get to the door, it doesn't matter what you do, you're already going to be fighting it, right? The impression. Yep. So we cover all that in it. So if you're interested in that course, it is available now. It is called the Electrician's Soft Skills Masterclass. So check that out if you want to. And I recommend it for people that have employees. These employees should be the ones that do this. Okay. What else? Oh, our sponsor is always, as you can see down here, CBD Pure. If you're interested in CBD Pure, you're interested in ointment, the oils, whatever that is, and the soft gels, go to electricianlive.com, and down near the bottom, you'll see the banner. Click on it, and you can get more information on it. We appreciate all the support and thank them for sponsoring the show. That's a lot of talking. So what else you got?
So I have a question for you on those webinars.
Yeah.
How much time for a 2-hour webinar that you're putting together? Because I've done a few of them with you, the mini ones. Recent one, I believe, was the grounding and bonding.
Yeah.
For a 1-hour, 2-hour class, how long does it take you to prep that class? Would you say a rough time frame?
Well, I mean, obviously, I've been doing this for quite a few years, so it's a little less time. And so what happens is it doesn't take nearly as much time once I already have the graphics that I've created. But let's say I was starting one from scratch and I didn't already have pieces that I could pull from, things like that. It can take anywhere from 48 to probably collectively 48 to 72 hours. And that is dedicated hours, and nobody's going to spend the entire time doing that. So that means a couple hours here, a couple hours there. It can take weeks, but overall, you're like 48 hours broken down, depending on if it's a small one. If it's a full 8-hour webinar or something like that, and all day, that can take quite a bit of time. So
right,
yeah, but broken down, I try not to work on more than about 2 to 3 hours segments on presentations, because it just eats up the whole day and I have other things to do. But hours wise, that's probably what it takes. And somebody that's not familiar would probably take a lot longer than that.
I guess my point being is you do these mini webinars for $20 a person.
25.
And you're getting,
$5.
20. 25.
Somebody will swear that you, somebody will swear that they said, but somebody said it was 20. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Jay said it was 20.
Jay said
so
it was 20.
Make him pay the other $5.
Right. Jay's paying the $5 in bitcoins. All right,
that's right.
All right.
So you're really, when it's all said and done for the hourly rate or whatever you'd be putting into it, you're not even making pennies on that. You're really doing these just for us, the Fast Tracks guys. I believe it's the YouTube.
Yep.
Or is this open to everybody?
No, this is a paid one. Well, it's open to anybody. They can pay to be in it. It's the fact that is that the YouTube VIPs and the generals and the Fast Track students will get access. They get access to these mini webinars as a bonus to what, you know, being part of our program. Everybody else, they have to pay. So be honest with you. If people ever give me a bunch of crap about $350 for a Fast Tracks program, I'm not being mean when I look at you and say, really, dude, really? For the amount of time that I spend grading and doing the Wednesday nights and putting together presentations and do that stuff, I'm not making any money on that type of those webinars. Yeah. Don't make any money, but again, there was always somebody out there watching to say, Paul, enough about you. I get it. But there is a lot of time. I appreciate somebody like yourself, you know, recognizing the fact that it does take time to put into that, that what it puts into create presentation or even to teach.
We appreciate it as viewers and electricians learning from those mini webinars. I'll be at that one. I know I've kind of skipped out on a couple of the.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to you.
Exam preps. We're so busy with life. The little one, she's just.
Your residential program, girl, you know? Your residential program's growing dust, by the way. I had to blow it off for you. Just sitting there waiting.
It's doing so good, too. we do appreciate that, and I'll definitely be signing up. But, what's the topic tonight? What are we getting into?
Okay.
What are
you going over? Yeah, so tonight what we're going to be going over, you know, we're obviously trying to finish up on our dwelling series. And so, you know, we've talked about garages. I think we talked about bedrooms. I think we've talked about kitchens.
Countertops.
Yep, and all that. But we haven't talked about the bathroom. And something might sound very simple. People go, okay, so it's an hour show. And sometimes I go over. We go over an hour. And you're thinking, what in the world could you talk about for bathrooms? Okay. Well, it's quite a bit. It's quite a bit when you think about what goes in the bathroom and the misconception of what can and can be on certain circuits and you know, whether or not, you know, when it comes to receptacle outlet requirements and placement versus, well, what if I want to have other receptacles in there that aren't serving the countertop? Can I? And what do they have to be rated? Is GFCI protection apply to all receptacles, for example, in the bathroom? And what about the receptacles underneath the hydromassage bathtub? And you know, what is that got to be? Is, you know, so there's so many little things that you could talk about that as electricians, we take for granted, right? We take for granted because we just do it. But if you had to explain all the little nuances to people, then it starts to add up, you know? So
yeah,
that's what the topic is.
With the code, there's a lot, and we'll get into the code. There's a lot of NEC code that comes along with wiring up a bathroom, especially in the residential mm-hmm. side. But there's also the installation portion of it from the contractor side of, you know, you want to put that receptacle outside of that vanity mirror, or if you are going to put it inside of a mirror, sure you have a glass plate over that receptacle. A lot of times we put it outside of the mirror.
I like to put it outside the mirror because I hate the thought of what if I'm feeding that first, and we'll talk about the code rules, but what if I'm feeding that bathroom? And that receptacle's in the middle, and it's serving both. Say we have two sinks, right? And we'll look at that. But you only have to have a receptacle. Yes. It has to be within 3 feet of the sink, right? And we'll get into details. But maybe that one in the middle is serving both sinks.
Sure.
And, but then you're leaving that receptacle to the next bathroom. And so that receptacle is the point where you're going to put the GFCI. And, of course, downstream, that GFCI, you don't need a GFCI because it's protected. But you just got conductors in there. And somebody comes and puts a mirror up, and all of a sudden now you're going back to trim out, and you're looking for the and the circuit's not working, or maybe you send your helper out there and he doesn't pay attention to it, and he doesn't realize that you got to have a receptacle in the bathroom. He should, but he doesn't, and he puts one in the one that's in the other bathroom, and all of a sudden the homeowner goes, circuit's not working, and you're like, oh no, and it's hidden behind the mirror. That would suck. Because I don't cut mirrors. I'm going to tell you right now, I ain't getting into that. And heaven forbid, they liquid nail it, and it mirror back, mirrors up there. Now it's on there, and you're like,
okay. Oh, man, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Yep. So
I guess.
So we got to say some shout-outs, though, here. Shout-outs tonight. We've got also Michael. Thanks for joining us. O is in the house. Jose's in the house. We got Nick is joining us tonight, as always. And we got Pooh Bear from British Virgin Islands is in the house again.
Pooh Bear.
Yeah, and also all of our listeners over on, and we don't want to attend, I forgot last week, all of our listeners over on the podcast, very popular. Our podcast probably gets 50 times more active listeners than the actual videos, because the videos started out as being a secondary thing. This is all about the podcast, but we've kind of gotten used to seeing each other, got used to the video part of it. But it originally started as a podcast, and we have a lot. We have over 300,000. I think I told you this, Jay. We have over 300,000 unique listens a month, and it's still been maintaining that. Okay, so that's over because the podcast is syndicated on Deezer, iHeartRadio, Apple, whatever that's called. The Google Podcast or Android, whatever they call that. Spreaker, Spotify. There's a lot of people that listen actually on their Alexa devices. And if I say something too loud, she'll start up because she's listening. She's over there listening. So, I mean, there's so many ways to listen to this stuff. So you can even listen.
What's up?
You can even listen to my Code in 5. I'm not going to push it.
I thought you were.
Next person that donates, I will do a Code in 5. Okay.
Nice. Right. What's up, Monty? Alex?
Monty's in the house.
Javier?
Alex? Welcome.
Big shout out to you guys. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday night. I know that we used to do it on Saturdays, and we're just glad that you guys came over to the Thursday night because it actually frees us up to spend time with our families and hopefully frees you guys up as well. Bring it, boy. Jose's been listening to him.
Bring it, boy. All right. Well, I can't see if there's anything donate. You let me know, and I'll hit the button. All right. So let's get into bathrooms first. So let's do it. Let's do this differently, Jay. Let's talk about it from a contractor's perspective first. Okay. So you've got the bathroom. We could have a bathroom that's obviously you have a central bathroom. And you could have a master bath off of the, you know, off the bedroom, okay, master suite type of thing. So let's talk a little bit about the thoughts. So layout is pretty much the same as any other room, except we don't have to worry about the spacing around the wall. We don't have to worry about 6 foot, 12 foot. We ain't got to worry about all that jazz.
Right.
So
even though the bedroom next to it. In that room, you are following that 6 to 12 foot rule.
Yeah, right in the bedroom.
But the master bathroom, you actually once you enter that threshold, you're now in that bathroom space, which I guess where I would start would just be kind of what the definition of a bathroom is, and I actually have that pulled up because as a contractor, I want to know what a bathroom is because maybe it's a powder room, maybe it's just a washing station, and I'm not required to. Bring in certain circuits that we'll get to. Maybe I can just feed it with.
But that's important because I can tell you that a fair amount of people in the Fast Tracks program still, I mean, it's early on in the program, obviously early like chapter two, is will not understand what the elements have to be to have a bathroom. Yep. So the key element is the sink or basin.
Yep.
Right? That's a key element. You have to have a sink. You have to have, or you can call it a basin, whatever you want. You have to have that. Everything else, you have to have at least one of something else. What are they, Jay?
Yes.
What do we got to have?
Okay, so bathroom, an area including a sink, basin, with one or more of the following. A toilet, a urinal, a tub, a shower, a bidet.
Bidet.
Or similar, or bidet. Oh,
bidet. I'm like, what the heck? Hold on, I got something for that. Where's my?
A bidet.
Yes, I'd like one bidet, please.
Hey, you got to worry about watch out for that bidet.
I need a bidet to wash my bunghole. All right, so anyway, enough of that. All right, so I'm sorry. Did I date myself with bunghole? I am Corn Julio. Okay, anyway, some of you out there get who that is.
I love that. Okay. I love that.
All
right. That was when MTV was MTV. Or a similar plumbing fixture. So pretty much, like you said, you have to have a sink and one of the other following
fixtures. So do you know what it means when we say similar plumbing or similar plumbing fixtures? You know what that means? Why we put that language in there like that?
Just to cover...
Yeah, you don't know. There's other types of plumbing fixtures that might come out, and it's a catch-all, right? So anything that would be plumbing fixture in a bathroom like that that would be very similar to any of these would be acceptable, and you could have it in there. But what is important is that you're absolutely right when you said earlier, you've got all these rules that we're going to talk about for a bathroom, right? And most notably things like GFCI protection and all that. If the room doesn't qualify as a bathroom, okay, then it might not require GFCI protection. So 210.8a, we have to be careful with. Of course, we did cover that. Now you could have a room that doesn't have a sink, but it has a bathtub or shower. Then we do have rules in 210.8a now that allows, you know, requires a receptacle within 6 feet. So we do have some rules that catch up with those unique situations where I might have a bathroom on one side and on the other side, it might not qualify as a bathroom. So in the past, it wouldn't require GFCI protection if the receptacle is, say, within 6 feet of, let's say, a shower. It wasn't in a bathroom. It's in a separate room. Well, now it would be required to have a GFCI receptacle within 6 feet under 210.8A. So, I mean, we catch up, right? We catch up with all those things. But, yes, very important. I'm glad you brought it up. Got to know what a bathroom is, and people take that for granted. It's just like a kitchen. Got to know what a kitchen is. Clothes closet. People think, well, I know what a clothes closet is. No. When it comes to code rules and lighting and 410 and all that, you need to know what constitutes a clothes closet versus like an electrical closet or a storage closet. Yeah. There's a difference, right? So, all right, let's get back. So I guess from a contractor's perspective, I'll bring in the code. We'll talk about the code, but let's talk contractor's perspective. So you're laying out you're in the bathroom. So you know you got to put boxes up for lights. You're going to have a light. What do you typically do, Jay? Typical bathroom. Where do you put your lights?
So typical bathroom, we start with the vanity fixture.
Okay.
That
luminaire.
Usually, you know, the surface mount, luminaire, that surface mounts right above the countertop and probably above the mirror as well. Again, we like to rough it in with just a wire in the wall, and then we go back and cut it in. But we'll start with the.
I like to put the box in.
Everyone's
different.
My thing is, if it shifts or something doesn't line up exactly the way it needs to be, then I'm stuck trying to pull out a box and possibly remodel. But again, like you said, everybody's a little different. We usually just leave the whips in the wall. One other big thing is in bathrooms now, people are wanting to go away from the actual center vanity and maybe even possibly do two sconces.
Mm-hmm.
That's also like a popular thing. So again, we work on the vanity or the sconces first. We look at the exhaust fan. So again, a lot of times that's two switches for the vanity fixture and then the exhaust fan. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times for the lighting, they'll put a 6-inch shower can fixture inside the shower itself. And so a lot of
recess,
times that's on
recess with, can with a wet location trim, right?
That's exactly what we use, or we use those wafers, which are wet location rated as well. So again, you have multiple different options, but like you were saying, if you are in the shower, you definitely want to make sure that fixture is rated for that.
So typically, the lighting would not be GFCI required. However, when you put that in the shower area, then usually the manufacturers will tell you in the literature that that they want it GFCI protected. Right.
Oh,
so you have to look at the literature. If you're going to put a luminaire inside of a shower area, then, you know, or directly above it or whatnot, unless it's, you know, above the 8 feet, you know, that type of thing, then you got to make sure that you're actually, I mean, look at it. If you're putting a wet location trim on it, chances are it's in a wet location, and if that's the case, look at the instructions. Okay, look at the instructions, and just to make sure whether or not it has to be GFCI protected or not.
Right.
Just be safe. Okay, that's a quick fix later, maybe. Although you probably end up protecting everything with GFCI at that point. But we're going to be there anyway, Jay, in 2023. So might as well get used to it.
So. You know. It's crazy because a lot of times we will bring the home run into the lighting box and then jump to the GFI box. But like you were saying, if that's the case, you could just come into the GFI with the home run and load side out to the switches, and you'd be okay. But yeah, that's normally what I see when I go into a typical bathroom. I always try to ask the customer. I give them that soft skills of hey, you know, would you like any additional lighting? Mm-hmm. What do you have? They say, oh, well, we got a fixture already picked out. Well, let me take a look at it. Pull it up real quick for me, and let me take a look, and maybe I can give you my professional opinion of where we're going to put that and what it would look like. So we go over lighting first, and then we'll go over the switch locations, because they kind of go with each other, right? For every fixture you're going to turn on, or the customer is going to turn on, or the exhaust fan, it needs to be controlled by a switch somewhere. So switching and lighting go together. And then once we got that figured out, we'll move to the required receptacles in a bathroom.
So Alex makes a point, and I've seen this a lot too, is that a lot of inspectors will not allow the wire just to be hanging.
Yep.
Although, again, sometimes they just pick and choose, because they might not want that. But how many times have you actually done lighting where you're going to put fluorescent surface mounts and you just poke down the NMB through the wall and they're okay with it? Because you're going to be making that up inside of the actual luminaire itself. So, again, sometimes they want their cake and eat it too. Just and ultimately, you have to do what they want. But I have done what you, Jay. I have done that situation where I just poke the wire out, and I poke it out and I curl it up. I don't leave it in the wall. I poke it out so that hopefully the sheet rocker will poke it out. I can adjust it, but I actually take it up, nail it, and turn it, and put a staple, and then I turn it and I put another staple so that it's right where I want it to be out.
Right.
If you have to adjust it later, we have to adjust it. I was going to tell you, we talked, I guess, a couple times about what happens when you got the center and it just happens to be the center of a stud, and that's where you want to be. And you don't want to go off to the left. You don't want to go off to the right. And I think we've talked about this. What I've done in the past is I'll use a plastic ceiling fan box, the ones that go right over top of a stud, you know, the kind of a horseshoe ones that go right over it. I'll put one of those round boxes up there, and it'll basically it'll cradle the stud, and that's how I get my center boxes. Some people will poke the wire out, and then they'll put a surface pancake. Problem with that, if you got more than one cable going into it, then you're probably going to have a problem with box fill with that pancake.
Yes, you will.
So I don't want to do that. So just kind of things, you know, it's your inspectors might not like something, the other inspector might. You got to kind of go with the flow.
Yeah, and when we do the trim material, our final trim material, we send out a 4-0 remodel, which is a round 4-0 fixture box that, you know, you cut out the 4-inch hole and you put it in to secure the fixture. Again, there's weight limits, and we make sure that we're compliant with those, or we will, and we'll also order a pancake box as well. Yep. We send both of them. And again, because you just don't know.
It could be just a 14-2. It could be just a 14-2 going up to it. And at that point, pancake boxes usually have the cubic inches that can handle a pancake. I think like 13.5 or something, or 7.5. I don't even remember what the pancake boxes typically are for the cubic inches. But usually enough for a black or white and an equipment grounds is not an issue for that.
But look at Alex's last little statement. He says needed to have a box, and a lot of times we need to recenter the box. Guess who's doing that recentering on their own time? Because you're not charging the customer for it. So now you have to go back and recenter it and kind of do it on your own time and drywall repair. And I've ran into this a lot. And again, that's why we just put a wire in the wall. And if there's two vanities, a lot of times we'll come out of the switch box twice, or maybe it shares with a recessed can light. Maybe we'll bring the switch leg to the recessed can light first, and then do two separate switch legs out to the to the vanities. I've actually been hit on putting two wires in a pancake, and it was so embarrassing. The inspector goes, "What does this say?" And I'm reading it, and it's like you said, it's maybe 6 or 7 cubic inch, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Do the math. You bring out your notebook.
Do the math.
Like, okay, man, you made your point.
Like, I get it.
I get it. I'll just rip it out and run another one." And so, but you're right. Those are the things that you have to look for when you're laying out a bathroom.
Yeah, and you guys that do this lighting a lot, you get used to it, and you get very proficient at it. You know, again, I'll go through the level of where people say, "Well, Paul, you haven't done it in 20 years. You wouldn't know." Yeah, whatever. Okay. done my fair share, so I don't have to worry about that. But okay, so we're putting the luminaires up. Again, interesting note for people out there that are new into the trade. You hear us talk about terms like switch leg, and basically, to clarify for those that might be listening, say a switch leg is when you bring a power to the luminaire and you drop down. That's a switch leg. If you come to the box and you go up to the luminaire, that's a single pole. Okay, single pole circuit versus a switch leg, that type of thing, because you're switching legs down and coming back up, that type of scenario. So then you get in all the nuances of whether or not you got to have a grounded conductor in the box or not, and you know, because you have to have it at all switch locations in accordance with 404.2, I believe. So it's a lot, but usually if you do what Jay says, you don't have to worry about it. If I hit the switch and then go up with single poles up to the actual lights of the luminaires, then I'm going to have neutrals at the switches. I'm going to have every, so I'm good to go, that type of thing. Okay.
Right.
All right. So that's your luminaires. You got set. So then you know, whether it's a 2-gang box or 3-gang box or whatever at the entry into the bathroom so that you can control. And my bathroom is you go into my bathroom and you actually continue on into a closet. So you can't leave out of my closet without going through my bathroom.
Gotcha.
But there literally is a casement and a door that separates the two locations. Okay, so there is a bathroom, and there is a closet in there. Now there is a receptacle in my closet. It's for the alarm system. But at the end of the day, the distinct bathroom area. So, and I have lighting for that too. So
Pooh Bear brings up a question with switching. He says, "Is there any code as to putting a switch in the bathroom or on the outside of the door?"
No, I mean, the only thing that you have to worry about with the switching is the location of the switching. But other than that, it can be outside, in. Nothing in the code tells you where the switches have to be, except for things like on risers, on stairs at the bottom, and for each landing that actually has an exit from the landing, you have to have a switch there, things like that. But there's nearly nothing too much in the code that's telling you exactly where you have to have these switches. You just have to have these switches, right? So other than that, there's really no hard, fast rule on where you can, you know, when it comes to where you put that switch in the bathroom. Just don't put it in the shower. Don't put it in the shower, the tubs, tub threshold, that type of thing. But really, other than that, it's really not.
You know, when you're walking into the bathroom too, and it's during the rough stage, mm-hmm. there's not a door. You know, you're going off of the plans or the contractor. Say, hey, where's the door swinging? Well, maybe the door's swinging to the left. Okay, that's cool. So my switch is going to go to the right. Well, you might have a single stud right there, and you go and put your nail-on box there. Well, guess what? Now that your nail-on box is going to be covered by trim. So mm-hmm. you want to take in consideration what size of trim that these guys are using, and the trim is what goes around the door, that nice finish surface mount. You know, usually it's about 2 to 3 inches. I always mm-hmm. figure 3-inch trim and then try to stay a little bit outside of that. So sometimes we scab it off. We'll scab off 2 2-by-4s. And what I mean by a scab is I'll cut maybe a 2 to 3 foot piece of a 2-by-4 and just screw it in mm-hmm. to that single stud on the right of the door. Or I'll just jump to the next stud over. Mm-hmm. So again, just be careful where you're putting your switches or your switch boxes and things like that.
Absolutely.
So...
okay, so we got our switches, we got everything set up.
Yep.
We're installing everything. What else? So that's okay, our, and we put so, our we put our luminaires up, and again, you all know that there's rules, for example, when you're putting in luminaires. Any pendant style, any hanging style of luminaire, anything like that, cannot be in a footprint 3 feet out and 8 feet up from the top threshold of the tub or from the top threshold of the shower. So this is imaginary space that you cannot. Now, you can have surface mount, you can have recesses, okay? But you cannot have pendant or hanging style, chain, those type of things in that space. Yeah, you can't have, I see these pictures online all the time about these chandeliers. People have these chandeliers that are hanging down, and you're sitting there going, you can't have those in that. But somehow it seems like, Jay, that it passed code somewhere.
Well, what happened?
Somebody accepted it.
No, I don't think so. I think what happens is the electricians rough in a box and blank it off. And then they go back and install it for the home. They say, hey, I'll do you a solid. I'll pass inspection. But then when it passes, we'll go behind their back. And maybe that's one instance, right? And I've actually had customers try to trick me into that. Can't we just put something there and then I'll come back later? And it's like, you know, you're going to put back there.
That's what they want to do with the bubble covers outside, the in-use covers. Put the in-use cover on, and when the inspector leaves, take it off, because they're going to break off anyway at some point. They're going to fall off, and then nobody's going to fix them. It just sit there, okay? You know, but you seen those new ones? They're not new. I guess they've been around even when I was doing a lot of them. They're accordion style. So they sit flush. They sit flush, and then the plastic, you sit it, and you grab it. It's like Tupperware, I guess. And he goes, and it pulls out, and you can put the cord in and use it. But when you're not using it, they're neat. And then they had the ones that you have to build them into the wall, so they actually go into the wall. It's not the cover. It's the whole box, and it's that type of thing. So they're a little more expensive, but that type of thing. So, all right, let's get off the lighting. So, and for those references, I guess, that people want to ask about the lighting in the bathroom, that type of thing, if you've got your code book, you're going to be looking at 410.10D, bathtub and shower areas. There's some new, the way things are done in there, but again, it's talking about what no parts of cord-connected luminaires, chains, cable, or cord-suspended luminaires, track lighting, pendants, or ceiling suspended paddle fans, really, in your bathroom, shall be located within the zone 3 feet horizontal and 8 feet vertical from the top of the bathtub rim or the top of the shower stall threshold. This is an all-encompassing zone, too. So this is out and up, okay? But it only goes up to 8 feet. You got those mega ceilings. I know you got those bathrooms in your house that have the 12-foot ceilings. So then you've got a space above it that you could do this, but not up to 8 feet. And then, of course, also it says luminaires in the 2020 edition. It has luminaires located within the actual outside dimensions of the bathtub or shower to a height of 8 feet vertically, okay, from the top of the bathtub rim or shower threshold shall be marked suitable for damp locations or marked suitable for wet locations. We kind of talked about that. So in our case, this is at all-encompassing up to 8 foot. If I've got a ceiling, it's 8 foot ceiling, and I've got a recessed cannon air, then I'm going to have a wet location trim on that. Usually going to have a vapor barrier on it, trim, and everything like that. Okay. And that typically, depending on where it's at, that might be just a damp location, even though wet is more restrictive than damp, so you're probably going to use a wet. But I doubt anybody's going to be shooting water on the ceiling, I don't know, to create a wet location. But anywhere else, horizontally and below in the bash to, in the area, would have to be wet locations. I have done some really high-end houses that actually had sconces in the shower area. It was that big. And, of course, those were subject to spray. Those had to be, they were wet location. They wouldn't have been considered damp location. And of course, their literature did say that had to be GFCI protected. Okay. So, I mean, check that out. There's actually some, the way they broke it down in 2020 code at 410.10D, the 1 and 2 is actually not much different than it was before, but it has broken it out a little bit. Right. So anyway, there you go. So that's your lighting. So let's get off the lighting. What's next? Let's talk receptacles.
Yep. So we're going to jump into, again, if you know that it's a bathroom and it meets definitions in a bathroom, then we'll jump to 210.11C3.
Okay. So we're going to talk about the branch circuit. Okay.
We're going to talk about the branch circuit. And if you've watched any of our videos before, you're doing the fast tracks or even the residential program, this comes up a lot, actually, and 210.11C1, C2, C3, and C4, we will talk a lot about in those courses, because these are important circuits, branch circuits that you're required to bring out.
And we have a C5 coming in. We have a C5 coming in 2023. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, never mind. We won't talk about that special bedroom circuit. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So what about, what do we got to have for this? What do we got to have for this bathroom? It said, "What is? Read it to me. What does the code say?"
Yeah, so $210. If you have your code book, 2020, go to page 64. Right at the top left, 210.11C3, bathroom branch circuits. In addition to the number of branch circuits required by other parts of this section,
now, which other parts of this section are the ones we just talked about. It's C1, C2, C4. Those are the other parts of this section, okay?
Exactly. So in addition to the number of branch circuits required by other parts of this section, one or more 120 volt, 20 amp branch circuit shall be provided to supply bathroom receptacle outlets required by 210.52D and any countertop and similar work surfaces or surface receptacle outlets.
Okay, so there's an and in there.
No other outlets.
Right, so there's an and in there. So it's talking about this at least one 20 amp, 120 volt branch circuit supplies the receptacle requirement for 210.52D, which we'll look at next. But it also has an and in there after that, so that circuit also supplies any additional countertop or similar work surface receptacles that might be in that, quote, bathroom. Okay, now, when it says such circuit shall have no other outlets, a lot of people will confuse that slang, outlets, as being other receptacles. That's not what it means. It could mean other receptacles that aren't part of the countertop or serving 210.52D. But what it's also trying to say is that I cannot have the lighting outlets. I can't have anything other than the circuit to supply the actual receptacle that's going to be required under 210.52D, as well as any of the other receptacle outlets that I might have in there that are to meet the surface area or the countertop area. Okay. All right. So that's what that circuit is. Now, Jay, it says at least one. I can have two. I can have three. I can have four if I have a bathroom like yours, right? So you got to have all the circuits in there. Okay. Right. So just remember, for those that's not talking about this tonight, but if you were doing a calculation, okay, things that you have to think about is all these additional things that you're going to be doing. But the interesting thing about the code is, we have values that we add to the code, okay, for different circuits, okay? So we have things we have to add for laundry, things we have to have for small appliances. But interesting enough, when it comes to the bathroom, does not have a value that you're adding into that calculation because it's assumed that's absorbed in your 3 VA per square foot.
The general
lighting. The general lighting, and general use receptacle.
And use receptacles.
Yeah. Okay, so laundry is going to add some value to the size of your service or whatever, and so will small appliances. The more you add, each one's a 1,500 VA. But bathroom, I can have more, but you're not going to add anything to your overall calculation, okay? I just wanted to throw that in there. All right?
Yeah.
So that's the first part. Okay, so now there's an exception. What's that exception mean?
So the exception says where the 20-ampere circuit supplies a single bathroom, outlets for other equipment within the same bathroom shall be permitted to be supplied in accordance with 210.23A1 and A2.
Okay. Without jumping around to 210.23A1 and A2, let's kind of keep this one basic.
Simplify it for us, man. We have two options, really.
I have one bathroom. Let's say I have a house with one bathroom. If I have a house with one bathroom, that 20-amp circuit that I take can pick up the receptacles, but it also could pick up the other outlets in here as well, okay, like the lighting outlets. Now, the only time that the 210.23A1 and A2 really kick in is, again, you have to worry about the number of loads and what you put on it, so I could have something like a heat lamp or something like that that could cause a problem. So if I have just one, keeping it simple, not talking about heat lamps, not talking about extra loads and how much I can put on a circuit. 20 amp supplying one bathroom, I can do the receptacles and the lights in there.
Yep. And I do it all the time in basements.
Yep.
Works
fine. The caveat is that circuit cannot leave that bathroom.
Nope.
Got to start in there and it's got to stay in there. But you remember the conversation I had earlier with Jay when I was talking about that two bathrooms and putting that receptacle behind the mirror? Well, that's a case where I'm just running the 20 amp to serve the receptacle requirement. And typical bathrooms, Jay, I know they added it in here, but typical bathrooms don't have additional countertop or work surface receptacles. They usually have the one that serves the countertop, right?
Right.
You could have others. Could be a big work. Could be a. And this came about because people wanted to have receptacles over for their, like, makeup area, which doesn't, sure. It's just not a sink. It's just a separate counter space, and they need receptacles there. Well, it can be on this circuit. It's okay to be there. They're not required to be there, but they could be there, okay? The real rule here is the receptacle has to be within a certain number of feet of the sink basins, right? So if I have the example like I gave Jay, and I'm hitting the one bathroom, hitting that receptacle, but now I want to jump out of that box, and I want to go to the bathroom on the second floor, okay? Maybe a little Jack and Jill bathroom up there for the kids. I can go up there and hit that receptacle, but that's it. I can only do the receptacles. That would allow me, under the general rule, I can go and hit that receptacle, and I can go hit the other receptacle. Under this exception, I can, and all I can do is the receptacles. I can't do the lighting outlets because the general rule said no other outlets, right? Yep. But if I want to supply the lighting and the receptacles and use this exception, then I have to go into that one bathroom, and I have to stay in that one bathroom. Yep. That's it. Now, the bathroom upstairs, if I did have two bathrooms, I could bring a bathroom circuit up there and do the same thing up there if I want. Okay? Not how I do it. Be honest with you, I usually will hit my lighting on with the bedroom, and my receptacles will be looped from different rooms. And people say, well, yeah, but what about a hair dryer? Come on, that's so a rarity. How many times do you have multiple bathrooms going with multiple hair dryers going at the same time? I know you're thinking, oh, all the time in mine. Really? Really? You trust me, you don't. Right? Well, I got a little daughter, and then I got. You don't, okay? Just stop.
And you could always approach them and ask them to as well. Hey, you know, code allows me to hit every receptacle, you know, that's serving the countertop and so forth per this code on 120 amp circuit. Now, your wife might have 100. Hair dryers or whatever it is.
Yeah, she might
want like me to
more.
Bring an additional circuit to this certain area, and you know what? It's going to cost you X amount. And they say,
and
well,
I think
you
the
know
guys
what?
Are, and I think the guys are kind of alluding to that because the bathrooms today have totally changed. I mean, there's the heated floors. There's they want a receptacle down low for the toilet because it's got this. Would you call it
Bedit? Is that what it was? We got, hey,
they have a receptacle down for their bedit. So they have a receptacle down there for, let's say, a bidet.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, he is from Colorado. That's folks. Right. Come on, I mean, you know what I'm saying? He does root for the Rockies.
We use baby wipes.
Yeah. That's right. He flushes the non-flushable baby wipes in Colorado.
That's right.
I'm just saying. All right. So we're going way off track. So, okay. So that's the circuit. Now, here's the other thing that people don't understand with this rule, because it's kind of been wishy-washy through the years. Once you meet this requirement right here, Jay, to have that 20 amp circuit to do it, can you have additional branch circuits in that bathroom? And do they all have to be 20 amp? The answer to that is they do not all have to be 20 amp. Once I meet this rule and I have at least one 20 amp circuit to serve those, if I want to put an additional receptacle in there for the bidet, or as you say, the bedit, I'm okay to do that. If it's 15 amps, that's perfectly fine. Now, what is common is that 210.8 is going to tell us, 210.8A is going to tell us that they all have to be GFCI protected. But I can have other receptacles in there if I want. For those other applications, perfectly fine. If I want to put one down low or whatnot, because I do this all the time when I run a hydro massage bathtub. Okay. It's not a hot tub. It's a hydro massage bathtub. Big difference is you drain water out after each use. In a spa or hot tub, you do not, even though I've seen some of you, you probably should drain your water. I'm just saying, but you don't have to. Whereas a hydro massage bathtub. It basically has no heating feature. It's the hot water from the plumbing, and it has air blowing through it, the bubbles, and then you drain it after each use. That's a hydro massage bathtub. That has a receptacle underneath it. That is a dedicated circuit just to that receptacle, and it's in a bathroom. And we've been doing that for years, and it's okay. Yeah. All right. So, anywho, so again, bathrooms have changed. They are not the way they used to be. But if you're used to doing these mod, you know, stick built, these as built or spec homes and things like that, then again, you're probably just going to have a simple bathroom with some lights and exhaust fan, maybe. You know, you don't even need an exhaust fan if you have a window. But right. Most people put an exhaust fan in there. So you have GFCI requirements in 210.88A that have to meet. And, of course, that hydro massage bathtub is also going to have to be GFCI protected as well. That's in accordance with Article 680 in those rules as well. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Like the guy said with the heated floors, the tower racks, the heat lamp fan, all these added
this is why you get
power,
the big bucks,
if you
want to
say this. Well, you're only going to get the big bucks if you're aware of these things or if you're asking the right questions. So, again, that's where these – and I'm pretty sure you go over in your soft skills training course is absolutely asking the right questions. You know, you go into these bathrooms and you know what the code is, but you want to ask, hey, are you guys having heated floors? Oh, you know what? We are. Okay, well, that's going to be an additional – 15 or 20 amp circuit, can I get the specs on it? You know, mm-hmm. We were talking about that last week on kitchens. Is a big thing for me as a contractor is I want to know exactly what appliances, what equipment, what are the specs on everything that's going in to this bathroom? Because like you said earlier, if you read what the manufacturer says, that tub is probably going to have a dedicated circuit. The floor heat is probably going to require a dedicated circuit. The heat lamp that's tied in with the exhaust fan is probably going to require a dedicated circuit.
Now that was the 210, by the way, folks. That was the 210.21A3 and A4. That's when you go look at this. No, A1 is it? No, it wasn't A3 and A4. What was it, Jay? Help me out. What was it? It was A1 and A2. If you go look at that,
A1 and A2, yep.
That's if you go look at that, that is permissible loads on multi-outlet branch circuits. And when we say multi-outlet, we're not talking multi-receptacle outlets. It's multi-outlet. Okay. So sure. Luminaires that go into a light box, that's an outlet. Okay, in case you didn't know. The boxes you put around your room to put a device in it, a receptacle in it, okay, that's an outlet. You just happen to be putting a device in an outlet. People want to call those receptacle outlets all the time, but that's not, it's theoretically it is a receptacle outlet once you put the receptacle device inside of the outlet box. And I'm really getting nerdy now, so I'm going to back away from that a little bit. But 210.23A1 and 2, that has to do with things like cord and plug connected equipment not fastened in place, limiting it to 80%. And of course, utilization equipment fastened in place, you're limited to 50%. If it shares lighting or cord and plug connect utilization equipment or both, then if they're both supplied, which is why that's giving you this notice, because it's going to severely limit the amount of load that you can have on that brand circuit, and that could cause a serious problem. So that's the thing that people want to put heat lamps and exhaust fan and light on the same circuit. They need to be very careful with 210.23A 1 and 2 to determining what they're working with so they know whether or not. And then, of course, you're trying to put it on with other things in there, the other luminaires in there. It's not going to work. Okay, so that's why it makes reference to that. So as long as you can make it work out, you can do it. But just be careful. But bathrooms today, I did some high-end bathrooms that had saunas in them, and it had the steamers. Sure. And we had to bring us like 40 amps to these steamers, 30 or 40, I can't remember. And these steamers that they would steam up everything. I mean, it was just outrageous, all the stuff that was in a bathroom. And I was like, dude, I'm just going in there to pee, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I might do other things. But at the end of the day, these things were, how much time do you spend in your bathroom?
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going the wrong direction again, man. You just have to save me, Jay, when I go those directions.
No, it's, the bathroom is very crucial because you're adding more circuits, again, when they add more equipment in there. So just be careful as a contractor that you're asking the right questions.
And so just talk about the receptacle. Circuit. Talk about the receptacle that's required to serve these basins. Let's talk about that a little bit, because this is something that people confuse that too.
Are we jumping to 210.52D? Is that where we're going to? Okay, so if you have your code book, go to 210.52D, and let me see here.
So this is the receptacle outlet. Okay, and you notice that it's in section 52. It's in section 52 in 210, which is obviously branch circuits. It's because we're getting into receptacle outlet placement. Where the receptacles, you know, you're used to 210.52A, that's your general use, the receptacles around your living room, dining room, blah. Then you move on to B, your kitchens for small appliances, and then you move on. So you're starting to move around, and so now we've worked our way all the way up to the bathroom, and we have to have a receptacle in the bathroom to serve these basins, okay? So what does it say? What's D?
Yep.
What
does D tell us? It says at least one receptacle outlet shall be installed in a bathroom within 3 feet of the outside edge of each basin.
Okay. Outside edge of each basin. Okay. So what's interesting about this is that, remember we said the one in the middle of the mirror? So let's say I have a double sink basin, two basins. A lot of people think that this rule, a lot of people think this rule means you have to have the receptacle outlet within 3 feet. You have to have one for each basin. And that's not what it says. It says you have to have at least one, and it has to be within 3 feet of the outside of the basin. If that one receptacle outlet is within 3 feet of both of those basins, then you only need the one.
You're good.
That's it. Now, most people put one on the end and one on the other end or on the wall, the perpendicular wall or whatever. That's fine. If your basins are far apart, then you might need to do that. The one in the middle would work. I personally hate putting anything in the middle. Especially if there's always a mirror there. That's just a no-no for me. It's on the left, and then if I need to have another one because that one's not within 3 feet, I put one on the right and be done with it. I do not put things in the middle because a mirror is going to go there, and I do not want to get involved in somebody forgetting to cut it, or I'm just not going to do it because I'll break it.
Yeah,
I'll say, you covered it up, you pay for it. 7 years of bad luck.
And if it's my personal home with my wife, which I would share the master bathroom with, all her crap would be plugged into it. So my razor, my toothbrush,
I'm having
to plug it into my bedroom. And that's not where it belongs. So guess what? I'm probably going to give each basin their own duplex receptacle, right? But like you said, hey, maybe they only budgeted what the minimum is. They want to know the minimum. Well that's
small
where...
little houses, you know, those 1,200 square foot houses, we used to do quite a few of those too. We call them spec houses. I mean, it's just a code, spec,
just
minimum
code.
Spec. 6 and 12s, countertops, 24, we say 2 and 24, 2 and 4 is what we say. Just bare minimum, okay? And when you do that, you can give them one receptacle. But again, if it's in the middle and it's got a double vanity, there's no way I'm putting it in the middle. But again,
be careful of the mirror placement, because you might have to put the receptacle horizontal and not vertical, which is still an option. So if some customers want it right there, right in the center. Yeah. So
what's next?
What is next? It says after
each basin, it says.
Yep. The receptacle outlet shall be located on a wall or partition that is adjacent to the basin or basin countertop, located on the countertop, or installed on the side or face of the basin cabinet.
Okay, so it can be in the side because of maybe your mirror issue or spatial limitations. It actually can even be in the face of the cabinet. Okay?
Sure.
Okay, so it gives me some options, all right? So I can
I don't think I'd install it
on the side, because again, it means that I got to go in and I got to cut the side of the cabinet, and I'm going to have that wiring method running in that cabinet, and I'm going to have some inspector argue that it can be subject to physical damage, so they're going to make me sleeve the NMB and something in there, and they're going to say sleeve it in Liquitite, and I'm going to have to argue with them and tell them that Liquitite doesn't protect anything from physical damage, and they're going to argue with me and say, well, then what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. You're the one that told me to protect it. It is protected. It's inside the cabinet. Okay, it's tucked away. What do you want? Well, I just put some Liquitite on it. Okay, but you remember, that doesn't protect against physical damage. Do you want your green tag or not? Okay, yes, I want it, sir. Whatever you want, I'll put it in it. Or I'm going to say, no, sir, I'm going to put it in rigid metal conduit just to make you happy. Okay, that's it. It's probably not what I'm going to do. All right. Anyway, keep on going. What do we got? Okay, so we know where we can put some things.
Yep, you have a little bit of flexibility right there. And then it also goes into saying, in no case shall the receptacle be located more than 12 inches below the top of the basin or basin countertop.
Okay, so it's kind of like the kitchen thing, right? Kitchen countertop. If you got a flat and you have a flat and you have no backsplash, that it's flat across the surface, you can put it on the side. It just can't be below 12 inches, and it can't be under an overhang that's more than 6 inches from the base. Okay. Here it doesn't say anything about the overhang, I don't guess. So
no, it really doesn't. I never noticed that about that, but yeah. It doesn't.
Yeah, and sometimes you do see overhangs. So you have a sink and it overhangs over the toilet. It's kind of weird like that, but
yeah. Okay,
it's things to think about. All right, what else?
Well, and the big reason for that 12 inches down maximum is the cord for, let's say, your toothbrush or the dryer. The hair dryer is a little longer, but the small appliances, they're about two feet long. So you have a foot of it hanging down, and then you have about a foot of cord, if not 9 inches, to kind of place your appliance if it has a 2 foot cord on it. So that's why they don't want you to go down anymore. You know, you go down 2 feet down below, now you're running an extension cord. You know,
if you're having to run an extension cord for your toothbrush, you got problems. I'm just saying.
You got problems.
They make manuals.
You don't want to. And like Elwood says, they have those receptacles that sit in the drawers too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, they have those as well. Again, you want to make sure that those meet code compliant, because if they're not, if they're below that 12 inches, then obviously they don't meet that countertop code here.
Now read the last sentence and I'll give you some insight on this. So what's the last sentence there?
Yeah, of course. It says receptacle outlet assemblies listed for use in countertops shall be permitted to be installed in the countertop.
Okay, so these are just like in the kitchen where you can have those listed assemblies that actually round or square, whatever, that they actually mount in the cabinet. Some that pop up, some that are in it, and they go bloop, bloop, like that or whatever. They're designed to be mounted in the countertop. And then when they come up, they will not be receptacle in the face-up position. They will be usually, horizontal. Okay, or the ones that pop up or literally pop out. Now, do not confuse those with relocatable power taps. If your contractor says, just put a receptacle underneath the counter, we're going to put these things in and we're going to plug them in, that ain't going to work. Okay, that's a relocatable power top. It's not designed for permanent wiring. The ones that are designed for permanent wiring are hardwired. So you would bring your non-metallic sheath cable into the bottom of it, and it would have a clamp built into it, and you would have to wire it. That is designed, and they're not cheap. Whereas you could probably find a relocatable power tap type cheap. That's not going to work for this application. Okay, it's not listed. How should we say it? It says it has to be listed for use. Those are not listed for this type of use. Okay, they are out there. They are expensive to get the ones that pop up. Again, you have so many other options on the wall, on a partition sidewall, on the side of the cabinet, in the front of the cabinet, just not more than 12 inches down. You got a bunch of options before you have to go cutting a counter and putting something in a counter. If you can get away from that option, get away from that option. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's really going to cost you some money.
Yep. All right. What
and
else?
The installation of it doesn't always go as well too, because you have to coordinate with who's cutting out the countertop. What mm-hmm. size of hole are they cutting out? What if they cut it too big? I've had guys cut out the countertops too big. Well, mm-hmm. I have to refer back to my email where I told them the exact size that they need to cut out.
Absolutely.
And you have to be on the money. Luckily, we were able to find another listed countertop that fit that actual hole size. Okay. So we were able to do some research and get it. But again, I had to special order that one. It cost me a few extra bucks to rush deliver it to mm-hmm. get it installed before inspection. So just make sure you're coordinating that too, but stay away from them. Don't do the pop-ups if you don't have to, if the customer doesn't request them.
Yeah, if you don't have to, stay away from it. So I guess we pretty much covered the circuits. You could have a number of circuits. We know the minimum required 20 amp one to serve this receptacle that we're talking about that serves the countertop. Let's see. I guess we should probably talk about, the GFCI requirements just to get that out of the way. Because if we're looking at 210.8A at this point, because we're talking 2020 NEC, it's important to even discuss this so that you know the ramifications for the bathroom, because you could have, again, different types of receptacles, maybe in a bathroom, that could be of different voltages, maybe, or again, you know, ratings. So let's just cover 210.8A, and let's just talk about, obviously we only have to go very far. We're going to be at the, we're going to talk about A1, and of course we'll talk about A9. Okay.
Okay.
So
you go jet over there, 210.
Okay. And the reason I'm going to bring this up before we get started is there are some cases where your bathroom is, like in my house, is right off of your master bedroom, okay? And you have a sink that is located in your countertop, in your sink, and you have, oh, we're also going to look at 7 too, A7. And so I have a receptacle that's just inside the bedroom that's on the wall, okay? So when you look at 210.8A, and I'll get this one out of the way, Jay, and we'll talk about the others. Sure. A7, sinks. So this bathroom basin sink, it says where receptacles are installed within 6 feet from the top inside edge of the bowl of the sink. So how do you make this measurement? It is literally as the crow flies, okay, from point A to point B, like you're pulling a string. It's not running the contour of the wall. It's literally from point A to point B, the measurement. Okay, it's like if an inspector were to take a string, and I know many that do, have a 6-foot string, and they'll put one at the edge, and they'll take the string, and they'll pull it straight to over where the receptacle is, and if it's within 6 feet, guess what? It's got to be a GFCI protected. So if the receptacle, depending on your layout in the bedroom, which is a different circuit, is within 6 feet of the top inside edge of the actual basin, it is inside edge, right? Top inside yes. edge of basin, then guess what? It's going to have to be GFCI protected, even though the receptacle is in the bedroom. Now, prior to this, we didn't, you know, back when we looked through the 2017 code, it was different. Because if you had a wall that actually broke the measurement, or the doorway broke the measurement, okay? Or, you know, all of that would say, okay, once you didn't measure through the door threshold, you wouldn't do the measurement. Well, that ended, and it's no longer like that. So what it says now, if you look at the charging statement, it says for the measurement, it says for the purpose of this section, which is dot eight, it says when determining the distance from receptacles, the distance shall be measured as the shortest path the supply cord of an appliance connected to the receptacle would follow without piercing a floor, wall, ceiling, or fixed barrier, or the shortest path without passing through a window. It used to say the shortest path without passing through a door or doorway. So the door or doorway would actually be like a stop in the measurement. So you wouldn't measure 6 feet through the doorway because of the doorway. That is gone. So effectively means that you still got to measure it, and even though it's through a doorway or there's a door there, doesn't matter. If it's within 6 feet, it's got to be GFCI protected. Now, again, 2023, we're all going to be GFCI protected anyway, Jay. Remember, everything's got to be GFCI protected in 2023. It's going to be everything GFCI protected.
Right.
But as of right now, only within 6 feet of the top inside edge of the sink. Okay?
Yes.
All right. Now, talk to me a little bit, Jay, about, so what type of receptacles are affected here? So 210.8A. What does that say? I see a lot of gray there in the 2020 edition. What does that say?
210.8A for dwelling units?
Yep.
So we're saying all 125 volt through 250 volt, which that's the gray area that you're referring to. All 120 volt through 250 volt receptacles installed in locations specified in 210.8A1 through A11 and supplied by a single phase branch circuits rated 150 volts or less to ground shall have ground fault circuit interrupter protection for personnel.
So in dwellings, essentially all 120 volt circuits, all of those are going to be, you know, 150 volts or less to ground. So 120. So they're going to be required. So the interesting thing about this is people will notice that the voltage rating excuse me, the amp rating of the circuits is no longer there anymore. It doesn't matter whether it's like 15 or 20. Yeah, they were 15 or 20. Not there anymore. It's gone. So it applies to any 15, 20, 30, 40, 50. Doesn't matter. This is all about the voltage. Okay, 125 volts through 250 volts. And here's a little tip for you. Anytime in the code that you see something referenced to 125 volt or 250 volts, your mind should be thinking device, receptacle. Anytime you see things that say 12240, your mind should be thinking branch circuit or feeder applications. Kind of like AFCI's 210.12, that's a branch circuit rule because it uses 120 volts. This is a receptacle rule. It uses 125 or 250, which are NEMA ratings for receptacles. So if you're really struggling for exam, you get an exam question, for example, and it's talking about 120 volts, then you know it's about something to do with the circuit and less about the device. Okay, just a tip for you. All right, so A1 is bathrooms. So again, obviously, all 125 volt through 250 volt receptacles, and I don't know why you'd have a 250 volt in the bathroom, but this is, again, about receptacles. Okay, this is a receptacle rule, all right? Not about hard wiring. This is about receptacles. Let's see here. And then, of course, we talked about 7, and, of course, the last one is 9. And this is that one, Jay, that says, well, what if I've got a bathroom and then I got a separate area that is not qualifying as a bathroom?
Sure.
Okay, it's totally out of the bathroom. It's in another area, okay?
Maybe it doesn't have a sink.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't have a sink.
Because in definitions, you had to have a sink or a basin to consider it as a bathroom. So maybe it's just a shower stall that, maybe you're going in and showering up at a gym or something and they don't have a sink.
Well, this is dwelling units. So this is dwelling units, not gym.
That's right.
But we do have that in, we do have that in 210.8. At B, though, we do have that for showers and all that is there. That actually was added in 2020, so that's probably why you said that, because that was added in 2020, but only for other than dwellings. But you could have a separate shower area, let's say down near the beach or somewhere like that, and you have somewhere to the showers in there when you first come in, you might into the building. You might, I mean, most of their showers are outside, but you could have one that comes in, and all it is a shower. And it's not really, I have actually seen them at Nag's Head. Inside of the bottom portion of the building, it has a shower and a toilet, but no sink.
Right.
So that wouldn't qualify as a bathroom. But now that this is in the, this is very clear in the code, it says that bathtubs and shower stalls, any receptacle that's within 6 feet of the outside edge of the bathtub or shower stall, got to be GFCI protected. Didn't need to be a bathroom. It's a bathtub and shower stall. Okay. And of course, then that made sense. So then it moved over into other than dwellings as well. So it makes sense. So anyway, I don't know that covers the GFCI rule. That covers everything for bathrooms. I don't know of anything else that we would need to cover for a bathroom. It pretty much covers everything.
Yeah, and I don't see many comments. I'll refer to Miguel. He said, I ran, and I don't know if this was in a bathroom or not, but he says, I ran into a fixture that was 150 pounds. Tomorrow, I'll be figuring out how to anchor it on or in a high-rise drop ceiling for 150 pounds.
Yes. So that's going to be a box with an independent support, which is usually going to be a cable for something that heavy. Typical fixture luminaire boxes are limited to 70 pounds. Anything above that, it's going to be independent. It's going to be separately supported. And they do make these designs for ultra heavy boxes and setups. Okay. But the typical luminaire is going to be limited to 70 pounds. It's 35 pounds and is general and 70. Anything that's going to be over 35 pounds, I'm going to have to tell you the amount, and that's in 314. So, good luck with that. And
I was just gonna say,
may the hernia be with you.
I hope you have some help, man. Because that's heavy.
Yeah. So, Jay, I don't have anything else to add tonight. You got anything else you want to add tonight? I mean, it's pretty much.
No, I mean, I guess some of the questions that I get asked sometimes is, are you allowed to put an electrical panel in a residential bathroom? Am I allowed to put my subby, bruh, inside my master bath because maybe I have a wall that would be suitable for it, you know? Mm-hmm. That's always a question that I get asked about that. And I myself, I've seen them in bathrooms. I don't install them in bathrooms, and Paul will explain why, or you will explain. Well, but
it's not so much the panel as it is the overcurrent protection. So if you look in the code 240.24, it's E as in Elwood. It says not located in bathrooms. It says in dwelling units, which is interesting. I'll tell you a quick story in a second. But it says in dwelling units, dormitory units, and guest rooms or guest suites, overcurrent devices other than supplementary overcurrent protection, which means that I could have some piece of equipment in there with built-in overcurrent protection. That is not the main overcurrent protection. That is supplementary to the piece of equipment. So that's a supplementary overcurrent protection. Shall not be located in bathrooms, period. However, I remember back years ago, I did a bathroom for about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I did a building for, they were going to hang these Oriental rugs everywhere, right? And they are heavy. And there was nowhere that I could have put it on the wall because they were going for optimum space. There's nowhere on the wall that I could have put this panel for this unit that wouldn't have been blocked by this heavy rug. And it would have been argued that that was not going to be readily accessible. Okay?
Sure.
So it had a huge bathroom. So I put the panel in the bathroom. And people were like, oh. You know, this was an employee's bathroom. Okay? I don't remember if this one was for the general public, but it wouldn't matter. So I put it in the bathroom because it was perfect location, too, because right on the other wall was where the actual meter was and everything. And the inspector came out and he failed it. Now, of course, this inspector knows, you know, where I was. I was also the one that taught all of them. But it didn't matter. He came and he rejected it. He said, Paul, I'm sorry, man. I'm going to have to turn you down. You can't have a panel in a bathroom. I said, really? He goes, yeah. I said, well, let me ask you a question. Is this a dwelling? He goes, excuse me? I'm like, yeah, is this a dwelling? I said, because the rule says that I can't have overcurrent protection in a dwelling bathroom. But this is a commercial bathroom. Show me in the code where it says I can't have it in a commercial bathroom. And obviously he could not find it. And then I pointed out about the bathroom for dwelling units. So guess what? It went from a reject to, oh, you learn something new every day. And we got it. And ultimately that was the best place for it because that was the only place that was going to give. And it had all the clearances, workspace. It was, everything was fine. But that was the best place to put it. So it's important to know those little things because that would have sucked. To have to move that after I already committed to it, right? Whereas, you know, so it's less about the panel board. It's less about the panel cabinet. In this case, it's more about the overcurrent protection. That's the issue, okay? Humidity, things like that in there causes problems, okay? Longevity, long-term reliability, those type of things in the bathroom. Typically in the commercial, there wasn't a shower in there that wasn't in there, although there's nothing in the code that prohibits that, okay? So if somebody wants to put a public input in and says, why can't you do it? You can do it in commercial. Why don't you do it in a dwelling? It probably won't get passed because this has been in here a while. But at the end of the day, it's important to know that. Commercial, this doesn't apply. This only applies to dwelling units.
Yep.
Any other questions?
The questions I had are actually, I mean,
covered them all.
I did have one where, you know, could a person have a laundry room in their bathroom? Could there also be, you know, like, because I've done this with installations where when you walk into the bathroom, you have the toilet, the sink, the shower in one area, and then there's another area. You obviously have to enter through that one doorway to get to the bathroom, but also to the side of it, there is a laundry room as well, like a little built-in, you know, for a stackable washer and dryer. Now, even though that laundry room is in the bathroom, I would have to, I imagine, follow certain rules for that laundry area, or could I possibly use the bathroom power?
Okay. Now, the lighting won't matter. The lighting's lighting. Okay, so the first thing that you want to follow in your question is that it's a big difference whether or not you're going in. So now if I have to pass through the bathroom, okay, to get... So let me put it this way. Usually inside of a closet, the receptacle is going to be more than 6 feet from a sink. Okay, usually that. So that's not going to require GFCI protection. The lighting doesn't have to be GFCI protected anyway. That could be on with the lighting anyway. It wouldn't matter, okay, for that part. So that's the lighting. When it comes to the laundry, if there's going to be, if it's a single family dwelling, for example, and it doesn't use the allowances for laundry in a multifamily building where you have a laundry facility on site, which means that I don't have to have a laundry circuit to this dwelling unit of a multifamily building if I have a laundry facility on site, mm-hmm. right? But we're talking regular dwelling units, then I would still have to have the laundry circuit. I'd still have okay. to have the requirements of 210.11, I guess, what is that, C2? Yeah, I still have to have the laundry branch circuit, okay? Because okay. remember, the bathroom can't have any other outlet on it, can't have anything other than what's to serve by that one, right? So right. if I was building out, let's say, a cubby end, which is going to have like a stackable in there,
yep,
right? Very common. Have a stackable in there, then I would still have to have my laundry circuit. That brings another question. People say, well, if those stackable units use a 30-amp receptacle and they have the washer and dryer built into that 30, do I still need the 20-amp laundry circuit? The answer to that question is absolutely. The code says that I have to have a 20-amp branch circuit for the laundry. But I've got a 30-amp there. Well, kudos to you. But the code says that I have to have a 20. So you put it there, and if they're stackable, then you put a 30-amp there for the stackable, but you still got to have the 20.
Okay? Right. Okay.
So, you know.
So you could have a laundry area within a bathroom, but now mm-hmm. you have to divide it where that barrier is at and go, okay, maybe the left side of this room is the bathroom. I need my dedicated 20. I need to do what we've just explained. And then to the right of the room is the laundry area. Now I'm treating that as a laundry area.
So if I go through a threshold, and other people can interpret this differently, but if I go through a threshold and I enter into a laundry area,
yes,
even though it's off the bathroom, if I go into a laundry area, then you also have to remember that as far as the GFCI requirements are concerned, it's a moot point, right? Because I believe that in 210.8A10,
yep.
laundry areas, they're supposed to have GFCI protection anyway for that circuit. So, and that's now required for 125 volt through 250 volt. So that also means that the dryer in that area would have to be protected air as well under this rule under 210.8A.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's already covered. So it ends up in your case for the laundry being a moot point, except for the fact I still have to bring my laundry circuit there.
Right.
Still got to have that. And let's say it's in a bathroom that simply has, and I've had bathrooms like this, that simply has a cutout. It's still in the bathroom, but it has mm-hmm. a cutout, right? Then if I'm standing in a bathroom and I'm actually touching the washing and dryer stack, let's say, unit, then any receptacle that I install there, I consider that part of the bathroom. But if I have to walk through a threshold into another room, then that's a laundry area. It's got its own right. rules. So there's a lot of times that things are accessible from the bathroom, yet you're still standing in the bathroom when you're working the washer and dryer, right? So maybe,
right.
for example, it could be a big bathroom efficiency, and it has bifold doors on it. You open those bifold doors, you're still standing in the bathroom when you're doing your laundry, okay? So I would require any receptacle in there to be treated just like I would any receptacle that's in the bathroom. Good news is you don't have to even give this any brain thought anymore because now the way the code's changed, the only thing that's different here, like I said, is you still got to have your laundry circuit. And remember, yeah. dryer circuits are not required by the code. If you run one, you got to account for it in your load calc, okay? But they're not required. Okay. The washing machine, the ironing board one that could be on the laundry circuit, all those type of things, that's required. You have to have that 20 amp circuit. Okay. Whatever you want to plug into it, you can have it. But the dryer is not a requirement.
Elwood wants to know, timers in bathrooms, are they allowed? If you do have a timer, does it have to have an override?
Timer? You mean for the lighting?
I don't know what he's referring to, whether it's lighting or an exhaust fan.
Timers for exhaust fans are fine because that's an ancillary thing. That's just to suck out, you know, moisture. Everybody thinks it's for, you know, what they think it's for. But that's not what it's really for. So I'm assuming he's talking about the lighting. So if you go to 210.70A, then you'll see different applications. Like for habitable rooms, it says at least one lighting outlet controlled by a listed wall-mounted control device. Okay. Very broad. Used to be different. Okay. You know, now it's very broad. In fact, it's grayed out in the 2020. So a wall-mounted control device.
Yep.
Could be a timer, could be occupancy sensor, I guess, any of that. Shall be installed in each habitable room, kitchens, and bathrooms. Okay. Now, this does say, and you notice this is new. We talked about it earlier about location, but I just kind of forgot about this. They added this. Look at the 2020. It says, the wall-mounted control device shall be located near an entrance to the room on the wall.
Yep.
So it's got to be nearest to the entry. That's all grayed out. Finally, we're starting to see locations where they're requiring you a kind of vaguely, but like in a bedroom, that doesn't say that it's got to be right there at the entrance, although it makes sense, but it doesn't say that. When you come into the entryway of the house and your front door, it doesn't say the switches have to be near the front door. It's kind of stupid to put it somewhere else, but I mean, you want it to be close to where you come in, but the code doesn't say that. So this is one of the few times where the code, other than for risers and stairs, this is one of the few times where the code is actually saying the wall control device shall be located near the entrance to the room on the wall. Okay, so it's very, you know, starting to make statements about these. And that, again, that's the overall statement here. It's saying at least one lighting outlet controlled by listed wall-mounted control device shall be installed in every habitable room, kitchen, and bathroom. And then at the end it says, now it has to be installed near the entrance to the room. So we do have no footage. I'm not telling you 2 feet, 1 foot, three, you know, but it has to be near. And we'll let people argue over the definition of what near is. It's also like the argument about immediately adjacent. What does that mean?
Yeah.
What's immediately adjacent? To me, it's right beside it, immediately, right there. Other people say, well, 3 feet away is immediately adjacent. I'm like, no, that's not immediately adjacent. Jason, if I've got room right next to it, that's immediately adjacent. Anyway, that's interesting. I like that. Now, it does have an exception, though. It says, in other than kitchens and bathrooms. So this would apply outside. So since we're talking bathrooms, I'm not even going to look at the exception. Okay.
Elwood also says, what if you have more than one laundry branch circuit inside and outside? I think what he's saying is, what if you have two different laundry areas? Are you allowed to share those, you know, that 20 amp circuit that's required? Let's say you have a laundry room inside your house and maybe one outside your house in the sunroom or on a pad. I don't know, something like that. Two different areas.
The code says that in dwelling units, at least one receptacle outlet shall be installed in areas designated for installation of laundry equipment. If I have multiple laundry rooms, then I have multiple laundry areas.
Yep.
So exactly. I would have to have the receptacles.
So
now
the question is,
can that branch circuit supply both? And I would argue that you shouldn't. Because if you have two separate areas, then you're probably going to have two separate washing machines. And I don't think you want to be sharing branch circuits for that. Okay? But that's where it says laundry branch circuits. Doesn't talk about how many areas you have, because you could have multiple laundry areas. This says laundry branch circuits. And that's why it says right here. It says, in addition to the number of branch circuits required by other parts of this section, at least one additional 20-amp branch circuit shall be provided to supply the laundry receptacle outlets specified in 210.52F. 210.52F is what I just read you, and that was a situation where it says, in dwelling units, at least one receptacle outlet shall be installed in areas designated for the installation of laundry equipment. If I have two separate areas, then I'm going to have two separate laundry circuits. Okay? And that's a common sense one, because there's no way that we're going to daisy chain the other laundry in another laundry area that could have another washing machine. So then I have two washing machines on one circuit. No. So that's one of those ones where you just got to know the code to know that that's like, no. Right? But not going to do it.
Oh, come on. Where's my password? It looks like Elwood's the, since about 7:50 for the last 30, 40 minutes, he's the only one active in the chat. You guys don't have any other questions? Come on, guys. No. This is
Elwood says he's got the questions now. He goes, what about pocket doors? Well, pocket doors, again, the moving part is... Yeah, that would suck if you have a pocket door. So here's how I would do it. So say you have a pocket, you talk about switches, I assume. So if my pocket door goes this way, then my switch is going to be over here. It's kind of like the door would swing that way. You know, I wouldn't obviously put my anything in the wall over here, my pocket door, that ain't going to work. So you're obviously going to be in the opposite side, okay, for that pocket door. Incidentally, the pocket door, the solid portion, it goes back into the wall. You're still required to have your receptacle spacing. Somebody asked that a couple weeks ago in something, or maybe it was on the forum. And the answer to that is you can go all the way up to 6 feet from the door opening. So you just want to go far enough that you get past the pocket door portion and then put the receptacle in the wall, that type of thing. Again, so. Elwood, Rombo says, Elwood's asking questions for me. There you go.
All right, man. I just donated $5. I want to hear it. Let me hear it.
Do we do code in five? Who wants to do code in five? 5 minutes for code? Oh, hell. Bring it, boy. Code in five. All right, that's it. Two grown men acting a fool. All right. All right, guys, that's about it. We went a little bit over tonight. That's okay. Great topic, great conversation. We appreciate all of you that hung in there with us through it, and thank you for coming on Thursday nights. Jay, do we have anything else to say, or we appreciate everybody out there? And
thank you guys for coming.
All right, till next time, folks, stay safe. God bless.
Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Grunberg.